Hi, Posse. It's Kim. If you follow Art Supply Posse on Instagram, you may have seen me posting looking for listener participation. This episode actually came about because of one of those posts. And I really love when that happens because it feels like I'm talking with friends, which is kind of what I think of you guys as, even though I don't really know you. And I hope you enjoy that element of it too. So hello, Rebecca. Welcome to the Art Supply Posse.
Thanks.
So nice to have you here. So let's just jump straight in and let's get started with maybe the most important question. I don't know. Maybe that just depends on your mood, how you're feeling. But who exactly is Rebecca Weeks Howard?
Oh, wow. Well, first and foremost, an artist, although I find that making art is probably the smallest part of it that I do. I have been making art, as I tell my students, since I was about two, when I fell in love with finger paint, and then got lots of inspiration from my elementary art teacher, Mrs. Sperling, in Cranford, New Jersey, where I grew up. And I just was really blessed to have some great art teachers along the way. And luckily, that turned into a 35-year career so far. So doing what they do, working with kids of all ages, trying to make future artists, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you don't know what'll happen, you know, but hopefully, even if they don't pick it up right away after high school and become professional artists, it's a life skill that they can fall back on. So,
absolutely. Yeah, with them all the time, I think.
Yep. Especially in these days when you need something to help you process.
Absolutely. So you kind of touched on it then, but I'll ask it anyway. What is your first artistic memory?
That finger painting, I think, which, you know, may have been in preschool. I don't know. Both of my parents worked. My mom was a nurse, a registered nurse. Mm-hmm. But she retired when we moved a lot. My dad was an insurance salesman. So I jokingly say that I am from Ohio, Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey before five. they moved me in one of those bouncy seats. You're too young to know this, but before we had car seats, they had little bouncy seats that they would put kids in. Oh. And so I was less than 2 weeks old when they threw me in a bouncy seat and took me out of Ohio. By the time we got to Detroit, Michigan, my brother came along about 4 years into my life experience. Uh-huh. And so I benefited from having my mom stay home with me, you know, when I was the only child for a few years.
Yep.
And then right about the same time that lots of things were happening in Detroit, because we're talking the 60s and, and early 70s.
Yep.
My dad got a transfer to Newark, New Jersey, and they bought a house in Cranford, New Jersey. So I grew up, from most of my memories, 15 minutes outside of New York City on the train. And of course, that was an awesome place to be a teenager.
Yeah, like, it would have been, yeah.
Yeah. So I finished the first year of kindergarten there in Michigan, but then I arrived in New Jersey and they still had like a month to go in kindergarten there. So I did a month in kindergarten there and then, you know, met new friends and, like I said, landed in this fabulous elementary school named Walnut Elementary with Mrs. Sperling. And I can remember in second grade making huge dioramas and stage props and, you know, out of big butcher paper. You know, one of my favorites was the RCA Victor dog. So she would let her students sort of in a, I guess, a little art club kind of thing, but I don't remember it being after school necessarily, but a boy named Billy and I, Billy Curtis, have no idea where he is. Hi, Billy, if you're hearing this. we would sort of compete, you know, there was a little friendly artistic competition going on there for who could do the drawing for the cover of, you know, the choral music program or the winter, whatever. And so I guess we were sort of designated as maybe some of the best artists from second grade on. And, you know, anybody's artistic career never hurts when somebody's noticing what's going on with them. So
true. That's true.
Yeah.
So do you think that moving around a fair bit impacted on your art?
Oh, definitely. Because grew up, like I said, in New Jersey, but then applied to the art schools in New York, mm-hmm. didn't get a portfolio that was strong enough mm-hmm. for whatever mm-hmm. reason back then. And so instead of paying tuition in New York City, which my mother was a little freaked out about, to be honest, you know, even though we were right there and I was already in there more than she realized.
Yep.
You know, my kid in New York City, this is the 80s. And Rutgers, which was the College of New Jersey at the time, was more expensive than sending me to the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, to be a fine arts major out of state. So that's what they did. They dipped into their retirement fund that my dad had from the insurance business, and they paid most of my tuition with that. And so I ended up getting a liberal arts education, which my dad was very interested in, and took a lot of art classes, you know, fine art classes, drawing, painting, sculpture, fiber arts. I loved hanging out in the Potter areas, you know, mm-hmm. With some pretty prominent professors at the time. And I just kind of came to the conclusion after that first semester that I really needed to be able to make a living. And yep. those of us who are involved in the arts know the steady income is something. And mm-hmm. so I switched into art education that second semester and still took as much fine arts as I could, but, you know, philosophy of art and humanities. And I was lucky enough to have a class with Dr. Bass at the archaeological museum there. And I don't know how much you know about that, Kim, but the Body Farm, the famous Body Farm in America is underneath Neyland Stadium and was started by Dr. Bass after I left. But, you know, so got a little CSI experience. And I mean, I've always been into that kind of stuff too, all the old ancient stuff. I love dinosaurs.
Yeah. Cool.
The origins of humans, outer space, all that stuff.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about these different art styles that you were surrounding yourself with while you were in this education part of your life. And I wonder, how did other people's art practices, art styles, what they were doing, how do you think that impacted on you as an artist and what you came to do? Like, we will get to you as an educator because it is incredibly important, but just thinking about you as a student, like, how do you think, because I wonder if it sounds like you were surrounded by a lot of different types of artists and art styles and art practices. Yeah. And I would suspect that's probably better for you overall as a person and as an artist than it is to just be surrounded by just someone who only, or other people who only do one style or one sort of, do you know what, one kind of genre? Do you know what I mean? Like, it sounds like it was kind of a melting pot of different styles. And I think, do you think that served you well with that kind of thing?
I think it does, because certainly in teaching it served me well, because I've done every grade level. I've taught jewelry, I've taught stained glass, I've taught sculpture, I've taught ceramics, you know, so you name it, I've dabbled in a little bit of it.
Right. Yeah.
But I also think, you know, that's where my love for art supplies go, which is why I like your podcast.
Yep.
Because what my husband and I say is our whole house is an art studio, which is true. He's a photographer and a drummer. And he loves oil paints, but he hasn't oil painted in a long time. So, I mean, you name it, we already have it in the house.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's this going on and that going on, and you know, all corners.
Yeah.
So I can be really flexible, but it also is difficult, I think, to hone in on one thing.
Yes.
And then really, you know, become a master of my craft or become well known for this.
Yeah.
You know, I just bought two potter's wheels from Clay King in South Carolina, which is a place that I used to go visit in person when I lived in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I liked them so much during COVID. They're the little Aspire wheels. They sit on the countertop and you can only throw 5 pounds.
Yeah.
That I bought two more with my school budget. So we're going to teach the advanced level artists how to throw on the wheel. And I've taught kids as young as fourth grade the wheel.
Yeah.
But like in my mind, that's like a wintery thing that I like to do. And then I like to paint at other times in the year. And so, yeah, as far as my own practice goes, I dabble in a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I jumped into the sketchbook project with Brooklyn Museum.
Okay. Yep.
2 summers ago.
Yep.
I bought myself, you know, the little $30 sketchbook, and yep. I got super, super into the dual tipped markers with that project. So it was like off the diving board and into the deep end on something, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
And then teach it to the kids. So
well, yeah. I mean, there's the bonus, right? You can learn a thing and then you can teach it to the kids. So it's a win-win.
It is. It is. And I like to go pretty far out there with them as well. Like I have my Barbara Kruger influenced t-shirt on here with the Futura font on the red. And so today was Fun Friday and we taught them who Barbara Kruger was and listened to a little snippet from her about her work for, you know, 30-40 years. Yep. And then I tied that to Supreme Oreo cookies. And then I tied that to create your own Oreos online. So it was a digital thing.
Yep.
And then I tied that into Pokemon, just Pokemon Oreos just came out.
Sure.
So of course I had to go buy them online so I could give them to the kids. So the ultimate goal was make this art and then eat cookies. And that's kind of where I go. I'm sort of an open studio approach in class because, you know, I may know how to do it, but I really feel like I can give you the tools and then I want you to spend your time experimenting and researching and trying things out more than making 40 that look just like mine.
Yeah.
So I'm big on that.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And I think I'm going to jump on the next plane I can get hold of and come and sit in one of your classes because painting Oreos, I'm there. This sounds like where I need to be right now in my life.
Yeah. We focus like each week on a different material.
Yep.
From the standpoint of safety and, you know, they're not weapons. Don't throw them across the room and so forth and so on. And then they kind of prove themselves to be worthy of taking care of that piece or tool. And then we add to it. So now in future projects, you can pull out any of those tools and do your thing with them. And it's not exactly what we call TAB, which is teaching artistic behavior in the strictest sense, because those classrooms are more like centers.
Yep.
So if I want to do sculpture today, I go there. If I want to do clay today, I do that.
Yep.
I don't leave a lot out,
yep.
But I do allow a lot of choice in that respect. So the kids love my art supply closet. Yes, they do.
Well, I think it sounds – I mean, this is just my personal view, obviously, but it sounds like the perfect, particularly introduction to art. Like how else are you supposed to know if you like something if you're only able to do it how it was strictly shown to you by somebody and it had to be replicated the same way? That just doesn't leave much at all, really. Like you could hate everything that was shown to you if you didn't like it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, and yet you get to actually experience that supply, as you said, and then build on it using other ones you already know how to use. Sounds like the perfect class there.
Well, and some kids in my class have a lot of art supplies. They're lucky, you know, maybe their family either values it more or their family has an artist. So they already have those things or maybe they got super into it during the shutdown. So they bought everything at the TJ Maxx or the Ross or the Michaels. Those are all stores here in America. Or the opposite is also true where some of my kids don't even have a ballpoint pen or a piece of paper.
Yep.
And so that made teaching during the pandemic pretty difficult, you know.
Yep.
And if they're in my level 2 or 3, I do let them go in the closet and pull things.
Yep.
If they're in 1, then I'm, you know, I have 45 kids in my class, if you can imagine that, in my level 1s. And
yeah, no.
So that's a whole other subject, but everything would just walk away if I left it out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So do you find there's some kind of, I guess it's a freer way to teach the way you're teaching as opposed to that strict thing. Do you think they're getting more out of it, the students, because of that, because they're exploring it how they might want to explore it? Like, how do you, or coupled to that, how do you go, and you might not get them, I guess, but how do you go with students who aren't confident with art supplies? Like, because there can be that thing of overwhelm of, I don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. So what do, how does that affect
you? I'm thinking. No, you're not working. Come on, work. I don't know. And it's kind of like math. You know, I am not really a math person, although I've scheduled buildings and people say they like the logic of how my mind works around, you know, some of that stuff that they wouldn't think about if they were more math thinkers. But I found that I could see geometry, right? Mm-hmm. So I have that in my head. And algebra makes no sense to me at all. But some people are the opposite. You know, yeah, they really get the algebra and the geometry really throws them. And so when you compare something like painting to clay, I can be amazing with a pencil or a paintbrush. Yeah. But then when I get that, you know, wet, sticky material, I'm just completely turned off, or I don't want to be messy. Messy is really a big bridge for kids. And I did a year of art therapy study at Pratt Institute in Brooklyn a couple of years ago, and I really learned about that whole thing about mess. I knew it existed, but they really honed in on that. You know, if you are living with somebody that does not want a mess at their house, or if you just are turned off by mess, then, you know, you're not going to want to get dirty like that. And of course, you know, we give them, I have just tons of paint shirts that we wash regularly. But you know, I have acrylic nails, for instance. So my kids, some of them have acrylic nails and they're, you know, all nice and pretty, and I ain't touching that stuff. You ain't gonna make me use paper mache. You know, that's not happening. And yet others will be diving in anyway, because they're just dying to try it and see what it does. You know? A lot of them have also seen YouTube, and they want to try other things at home. So, you know, I'll have a kid say, "Miss, I'm going to do this because this is the project, but when I go home, I'm going to do my own thing." Mm-hmm. And that's
They're doing art. Who cares?
I went home and voraciously made comic books just with a pencil on lined paper, you know, and it wasn't because I didn't have better art supplies. It was just that was my preferred medium. I don't have any of them anymore. It'd be interesting to see what the heck I did, but you know, that's how I kind of processed my way through middle school for sure.
Yeah. It is always fun to look back, or when you stumble across something that you've made a long time ago and you're like, oh, okay, that was good sometimes, sometimes not.
Well, that even comes up because a lot of us my age have trucked all of our art that we've ever made, you know, with us forever. And do you do that as an artist, or do you just decide, yeah, that's not my best thing, so let me keep my 13 best things because I can't afford to move all this stuff around? You know, I move a lot. Mm. Or do I digitize it all? And then somebody says, oh, you know, what if I become Picasso? You're going to want the original.
No, you know. Too bad. If it's not,
I'm really not in it for that.
If it doesn't, you know, exist, I'm, you know.
Yeah, I'm more in it for just the community building, I guess, and helping to inspire others to do the creativity thing.
Yeah. So do you have much time for your own art practice?
I probably have a lot more time than I use because I like social media. So if I would limit myself, I probably could get some time back. If I would stop reading the New York Times, I probably could get some time back. You know, it's one of those things. And we're teaching in person this year. So last year was really hard to do anything because just teaching virtually and then hybrid, it was just so exhausting and intense.
Yep.
Especially at the beginning. And the beginning of every year can be that way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they say, well, you can just pull out last year's plans and go. But really, if you're a good teacher, you're not doing that. So, you know, you're adapting it to who your learners are now and what their needs are. So I think I could certainly make better use of my free time maybe and make more. And I fall into that same category we all fall into where I'm just sort of like, I don't really know what I want to do. And yet I keep these lists. I have lots of composition notebooks, which I also use with my kids. And I just make lists of, you know, things that you could draw, paint, create, whatever, so that I have something to do. I love those Inktober prompts, you know, where yep. they just give you a word and you can,
yep.
I don't do much of that myself, but I use that kind of stuff with the kids every day as a starter activity. So yep. I definitely preach a daily drawing practice or a daily art making practice more than I practice it myself.
Well, you know, you're human. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We are things good at giving up. Advice, not necessarily following it.
Oh, it's so true. And I'm a mom too. So there you go.
Well, there you go. That just even makes it more tricky. So do you think, like, I'm sort of thinking about your own art practice for a minute. Where is it at now compared to where it was, say, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago? Like,
well,
you mentioned you like to do a lot of different things. Has that always been the case for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's part of the interest in picking different media, you know, mm-hmm. to do. So I guess you could kind of equate it to I can, you know, do 10th grade in almost anything and figure some things out, but I never got the BFA. So
yep.
you know, my painting is probably still at the same level that it was. But 10 years ago, I didn't have an artistic practice because I basically took 20 years off from that while I was an administrator instead of an art teacher. And I was raising my kids on my own.
Yep.
So if you know anything about being a school principal or assistant principal, you know, those are 90-hour weeks instead of 40.
Yeah.
Something is always coming up. Sorry, that's my dog barking in the background.
Right.
So, you know, you're lucky you can get food on the table and you're eating out most of the time.
Yeah.
So I was really determined when my son went off to college to get restarted.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I then had time on my hands because I wasn't hanging out with him and taking him places and so forth.
Yeah.
And so I started back with painting.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you know, as a child, that was kind of my love. And so I tend to be very expressive with my brush strokes. Mm-hmm. You can see one right there, Kim, behind me. But and a lot of animals. And so people that see those, they kind of talk about the expressive paint, you know, but also the expression on the animal's face. So I'm not really into realism. Mm-hmm. I want you to be able to know what animal it is, but I don't necessarily need it to be in the proper setting or blue versus gray or whatever. Yeah. I kind of have an image or a photograph that I start with and I can draw it pretty quickly on the canvas. And then I just sort of let that go and let it take me.
Yep.
Wherever it wants to go, kind of like the marble sculpture, right? It talks to you and tells you who it is.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is figurative botanical work, flower studies in watercolors and collage and painting. And then, as I said, trying to get myself back into the clay as an artistic practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where it's gotten to. And then about 6 years ago, we moved to Las Vegas. And I got involved with a local gallery here called City of the World and became their vice president and their gallerist. And so then spent a lot of time when I wasn't working facilitating other people's art process. Again, that's that community thing, you know, advocating for them, advertising for them, trying to get resources for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nonprofit. And so I took a break from that last December and then applied to graduate school. So now I'm actually in graduate school for my EDD in art education at Indiana University. So I like to keep busy.
Clearly.
I like to read, but I like to read things that are art related, you know. And so that's always kind of been the focus. And now I guess maybe my hope is to somehow change the vision of art education moving forward in the field, you know, because I'm kind of coming back out of that administrative world where I was known, like I said, for master scheduling and other things, and pushing that energy into the art education again. And I'd taken a break from that for a while. So I'm doing what I love, and that's what's important. And I would say 98% of the time I like what I'm doing. So,
well, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So do you think, would you still say an art education now is important?
Absolutely. And it's being cut more than ever.
Yep. Same in this country too. Don't worry. I mean, I shouldn't say don't worry, but yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just America is what I meant. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And the fallout from the pandemic is that the money doesn't exist.
Apparently.
And so what gets cut, of course, is arts.
Yep.
But I am really blessed to be in the building that I'm in. My administrative team has been 100% supportive. They've given me all sorts of supply money. We do have a student fee. But then I also, because of my work with the gallery and networking throughout town, I get a lot of donations for my program. So a lot of what you see in that closet is either stuff from our house that, you know, we're not doing this kind of art anymore. Let's take it in and share it. Or people will call, you know, so-and-so's auntie died and she has all this stuff. Do you want to come over and look through it? Or I'm moving across the country and I can't take all this with me, but I know you teach middle schoolers. Would you like a donation?
Yeah.
You know, and people know that we work that way. So they lead other people to us too. There's a great public education foundation here in Vegas. And for $25 donation that I can write off on taxes, I can get a lot of stuff that could be basic stuff like scissors and glue and tape, but we use that every day. So, you know, it's knowing where to get it too.
Yeah, of course. I really like that.
But yes, as a advocate for arts, you know, I feel like we've been fighting this battle of art's important my entire career.
Yep.
A lot of schools around the country don't even have K-8 art, visual art.
Oh, really?
Some don't have music in this country.
Yeah.
I just think that's sad, you know?
It's very sad. Yep.
Yeah, and other places, they really just look at us as art teachers, as, you know, babysitters, while regular ed teachers get their prep. And that's not what it is. You know, we have a curriculum and we have lots of important things to do. And there's tie-ins with STEAM and STEM. But, you know, having done admin and read a lot in those areas, I really believe that mark making and art creation turns into letters, which equals reading, which equals math and music. And, you know, everybody starts with that dot on the page, no matter what age they start at.
Exactly.
The key is to get some crayons into somebody's hands a little bit younger.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
A lot of our kindergartners haven't had crayons or scissors or paper to work with. Like I said, they're coming from some really extreme transitional places and they just don't have that stuff.
Well,
there's a gap there too. Right?
You have to even think of, like, when you think about art history, the only reason we know what we know is because there was art that was left behind. Like, if we're not doing it now, then what about in 50 years' time? They're not going to know what we were doing now. Like, you know, it's just,
Well, the internet makes that a little different, but, you know. I think it's really funny that a couple weeks ago, they maybe it's just last week, talking about the footprints and the handprints made by the little kids. That's now the oldest known art made, you know, because it was like purposely laid out. So it's evidence that kids were playing and they were making marks. You know, and so as climate change happens and we discover more things about the truth, you know, as we've learned it, you know, and as lots of historians are uncovering the important things that women and LGBTQ folks and, you know, maybe the underserved populations and certainly Black and Hispanic and, you know, other than white males did contribute to history all along as much as they were able, you know.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Given the constraints at the time, it's important. And, you know, that's one of the things we talk about in education too. Decolonize your syllabus. If you're still teaching all the old white guys who, you know, now we know they really were, you know, maybe not such great guys
exactly. Yeah.
So just because, you know, I mentioned Picasso, just because we all grew up learning that, it doesn't necessarily mean that I have to teach it every single year.
Exactly.
You know, and there are other Spanish artists that I can teach.
Yep.
You know, so it's kind of a balancing act. And there's a lot of us out there working together and networking on, you know, how to handle that. I mean, I myself am a white woman, so my voice obviously is going to be a little more privileged.
Yes.
You know, I'm working on my third college degree, so who am I to say that this is important? But I teach at a school that's primarily Latinx and multiracial. And so I pull in those artists all the time, and mostly living artists, because I want them to see that a career as an artist is a possibility.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm always looking for those sources worldwide on social media so I can share those.
Well, I think it's important too, because the other thing that I've always found frustrating is recognizing someone after they're dead. Like, to me, it just seems not stupid, but like, you're just like, hang on a minute. Like, I understand things, you know, there's all sorts of things that come into play, but why not recognize and appreciate and cheer someone when they're alive, making art that you like and they're alive, and letting them know that you like it, and hey, maybe even buying it, than waiting till they're dead and then going, oh, this person made all this art over their entire life and they were great, now they're dead. You're like, well.
Yeah, and that also brings up the idea of Indigenous folks. You have, you know, Aboriginal populations in Australia. We certainly have. All sorts of, I'm out west, so, you know, we visit all of those sites and check out all of that stuff. And it's important that the kids know that there still are those folks making those crafts, making those arts. They are alive. They exist today.
Yep.
It's not just a historical thing.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm looking at that beautiful pottery that's made by the Zuni, there are still Zuni potters working today. So, you know, make sure that kids know that. Because I don't really think when we were being taught that that was a heavy influence at all. So, you know, I was watching Maria Martinez making pottery on film strips that were created, you know, in the 60s or something. And I was learning about it in the late 70s in ceramics classes.
Yeah.
She still has things to tell my kids today, but there's a lot of potters out there who are actively working that also need to be taught.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. So I'm curious, do you, it sounds like you do, but do you have that flexibility as an educator to go, well, this is what I want to teach this year or this week even, like, or is it, because I obviously, as not being an educator myself, and also, of course, there's differences with you're in America and I'm in Australia, but how much flexibility do you have as a teacher to sort of teach where, or take your classes where you want them to go, as opposed to what should be, and I say that in air quotes for the listeners, what should be taught? Like, are you allowed to completely ignore the old white men, for example, from years ago? Or do you kind of have to bring them in, even from a perspective of, well, this is how it was done in this style, but you know you can do it your way, and then show them how?
Yeah, I think it's more like that, but it's not so much a have to as – we have national art standards, and I know there are international, you know, organizations too, obviously. I'm a member of National Art Education Association, and so there are those, which hopefully help those little travelers like me, little Becca, you know, going from state to state. I'm still getting a certain thing at primary and at middle and at secondary. And then each state, of course, has them. And there are pacing guides that are written by panels that work together. Mm-hmm. Probably like on a 4 or 5 year rotation.
Yep.
In my experience, I know in North Carolina, it went with textbook adoption.
Okay.
So the team would meet, they'd decide what's important, what courses would be offered, and then the textbook publishers would receive that, and then they'd come up with the textbooks. So a year later, you'd adopt the books. Now, we don't do textbook adoption anymore the way mm-hmm. we used to, because it's all digital, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I just got invited, you know, in a mass email. It wasn't a personal invitation to me, but there is going to be a panel that gets together at the state level on a meet, you know, mm-hmm. on a Zoom, mm-hmm. And works on the next go round of what are those standards? What are those things that have to be covered?
Yeah.
So my administrators at the district level and at the local level are looking to see, is what you're doing tying into those?
Yeah.
And they really like it if what you're doing is also tying into some English, some Spanish, some mm-hmm. science, mm-hmm. some math, you know, because, and that's just how I teach anyway, because
yeah.
I was an administrator for a long time. So they're looking at it in that respect. There's some suggested artists. I still think there's the tendency maybe to look for the pack of, you know, resource posters from yeah. different companies, teach yeah. from those. I certainly did that, you know, for the first 2 decades of my career.
Yeah.
But now you can get so many things on the internet, and a lot of artists will, you know, respond to you and work with you.
Yeah.
We did several virtual visits last year where either I went and interviewed, you know, mm-hmm. on the phone camera
yep.
while I was in a gallery doing a walk around with somebody, or they would meet me with the kids in the Zoom.
Yep.
And show the gallery or the museum or whatever. So we're still doing some of that. And of course, you know, the kids know school appropriate. So we have to, you know, it's yep. middle school.
Yep.
You can say almost nothing without making yep. them laugh about something you've said. but I've taught elementary, I've taught high school, and those yep. things, you know, it's up and down, but, hopefully it's building, you know. So I guess my thing is I love Van Gogh, but you don't need to teach Van Gogh every single year for yes. 13 years necessarily.
Yes. Yep.
It's great to have Van Gogh up because they might recognize, yes. oh, that's Van Gogh.
Yes.
So, you know, I mentioned my Fun Friday activity, yep. and that's where I will often pull in somebody that's a little bit more famous, like Barbara Kruger, and say, okay, you know, this is why you should know this. I do yeah. that with The Scream by Edvard yeah. Munch. You know, that's yeah. that's something you're going to see everywhere. So you may as well know what the yeah. reference is, what the yeah. primary source document is, right?
That's yeah, exactly.
And I have him on my shoes with my Vans shoes. And I, you know, wear the shirt periodically yeah. the rest of the year just to yeah. kind of remind them, yeah. you yeah. know. And I'll bring in funny memes that are related to the Mona Lisa, and they know yep. the Ninja Turtles are the Renaissance artists, and you know, it's mm-hmm. we do it that way more than, you know, I will teach this. But
well, the cool thing about doing it that way too, I think, is you're making them aware just how pervasive art is in the world. Like, it's not yeah. necessarily just something hanging on a wall. It's literally everywhere. It's all yeah. the time. Their books, you know, they've been designed, the covers, and like, it's just everywhere. And I think the great thing about what you're doing is you're really, and you're not even probably going, art is everywhere, but you're making them realize art is everywhere without actually telling mm-hmm. them art is everywhere. Like,
yeah, we just did fashion design because it was Fashion Week in New York.
Yes. Yep.
We talk about chair design.
Yep.
I do a whole unit on buildings of the world and teach them about some of the basic, you know, the yeah. top 7 buildings across time that mm-hmm. led to the tallest building. And, yep. you know, they know what the Leaning Tower of Pisa looks like. You know, again, that's, you know, Machu Picchu and Stonehenge was on the test last year. So, you know, it's good that they saw it somewhere before they got to whatever grade it was.
Yep.
So there's a lot of that. And the other thing is we've moved towards project-based learning, which has been going on for 20 years or so. But I'm not giving them the pencil paper test like you would think you'd get even in art class.
Yep.
We don't do it that way. So if you're working on a project in class for more than 4 or 5 studio periods, which equals hours, basically,
Of course.
Then that's a test grade, you know.
Yeah.
But if it's something that you're doing today, like the Oreo cookie, then that's a formative grade that I'm just checking in to see, do you have these skills?
Yep.
And then these skills I will build on next week with whatever that next project is, you know?
Yeah.
So I try hard to touch on as many different sources as I can.
Mm.
Well, teach Frida, of course.
The cool thing about that is like you're going, well, okay, so we're learning about buildings. Well, that could be the seed for someone to become an architect. Like I think we often don't think of people as like architects as a perfect example, and even engineers to a degree as well. There is art there. It's just formed and created and shown in a different way than what we might traditionally think of as art, but it's still art, like, you know, and you're giving them that seed without even, you know, pointing out to them that you could become an architect based off learning about these buildings, you know, like it's a whole
nother. Well, except I do point that out because I want them to know.
All right. I wasn't going to put words in your mouth.
I do explicitly talk about engineering and architecture with that. And like right now my threes have had to take a Barbie doll, although it's not always a Barbie doll, but something like a Barbie doll, and take it apart, like you see them do on the internet, put it back together in a different way. And, you know, they've discovered, oh, hey, I could be a cosmetologist because I'm doing makeup and hair.
Yeah.
And, oh, my hair's falling out. Oh, my goodness. What am I going to do? You know, and like culinary arts. We have a huge culinary arts sector here in Vegas, trying to come forward. And I have friends who can make the most amazing sculptures with food, you know?
Yeah.
So bringing that in, one of those tours we did was all about Lego, and then we tied it into Lego Masters, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a matter of being out there and seeing it and being like, oh, how can I bring this in? You know, and that's the change that I'm talking about.
Yep.
I might have taught fashion for the last 6 years, but each year that I teach it, I change it up just a little bit.
Of course.
And I always treat it really like a challenge. You have to have X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have X, Y, and Z, you don't get a C.
Yep.
Beyond that, I want to see creativity. So if you want an A or a B, go above and beyond that and blow me away, you know. Yep. And then it's pretty subjective because each kid has a different ability level.
Yep.
And so it's my job to figure out of, you know, 45 kids in a class, you know, what's an A, right? Because your ability with clay is different than my ability with clay. And
correct.
So did you grow through the process? Did you do all the things that were required? Did you clean up? Did you use supplies safely? Well, then that's an A, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. So I'm curious to know, you mentioned about the using the online Zoom to actually visit artists and visit galleries and things. And whilst we do all, of course, want to return to normalcy where we're in person teaching and learning and doing all those things, I think the one thing for me as someone who is in Australia, and so, of course, you hear about all these awesome galleries overseas, but you don't necessarily have the ability to get to them, certainly not in COVID times, but even just normal times, it's finances, it's work, it's all those things. So it has been cool to be able to sit at the computer or sit at the iPad or whatever and go and virtually look at a gallery. And I think that's certainly I've noticed that has been a big improvement in these past 18 months is now that is so much easier to do and it's better quality as well. Do you think that's something that will be perhaps you could keep as a thing? So instead of, you know, you could even just visit a gallery on the other side of America or on the other side of the world for your students to just get that feel as well. Like, is that something you could see remaining as a thing?
For sure. And it used to be that it was more on us as the teacher to come up with the appropriate websites and links and have kids kind of go scavenger hunting through appropriate sites so they didn't see, you know. But now the museums have had to figure out a way, at least in this country, to stay open. You know, how do I how do I get the entrance fees or have them buy the stuff in the bookstore when the bookstore is closed? And so there have been a lot of really innovative things, I think, done, and, you know, much better, like you said, visuals and video. I mean, certainly that's just technology catching up with what's going on as well. You know, everybody has a camera in their hands, but it doesn't mean they necessarily know how to use it well. And I'm guilty of that too sometimes. But there's also a lot of professional development that's available to us as artists and as teachers, you know, so that we can improve our practice that wasn't there 2 years ago. I mean, if I don't want to fly to, you know, somebody's workshop in Florida because of a health risk or, you know, whatever, I can still pay my money and jump online and make my whatever along with them. Hopefully there's room for creativity, as we said, and it's not, you know, 7,000 tulips, but there's big business in that too, as artists. And I know a lot of artists who have, you know, kind of turned their paint and sip parties or their art related events into, you know, more money, which is stability for them.
Exactly, right.
I mean, God bless Jean Stark. She's out there doing it. So
it's actually been fascinating to observe that these changes and these improvements. You know, like, it's just, I don't know, I've just sat and watched it and sort of thought, this is good. Like, it's always nice to go in person to do a thing. Of course it is. But it's not always possible, even excluding the pandemic. So if you can still do it just in a slightly different way and still pay the person, pay the artist, then why not?
Well, in some ways, you actually have better access because, like I said, growing up near New York City, you would go to the Met to see something infamous. And, you know, you were in the room. I can remember being in the High Museum in Atlanta to see the Terracotta Army. And I mean, I have loved that since, I don't know, the 80s anyway, when I figured out about it. I've learned a lot more about it since then. So maybe it's not a good thing to be in love with, but, you know, as a clay person, it was pretty cool. And so I had this big thing, I was going to go see them, and you couldn't see them, you know, there was too big a crowd. And I'm a little claustrophobic anyway, but you know, who wants to pay all that money for a ticket and stand in line? And then it's kind of a letdown. You know?
Well, isn't that what they say about the Mona Lisa? It's the same sort of thing. You finally get to see it and you can't see it anyway, essentially.
The Irises by Van Gogh. You know, you could just keep going on and on.
You could make a list.
You know, you're paying $40 times six people you're taking with you to get in there, and that keeps the museum open. But what kind of an experience is that? You know?
Not great.
I went to see the O'Keeffes in Santa Fe up there, where, you know, not in her house, but there's a little museum there. And, you know, the crowd was just right. But how often is the crowd just right?
Yeah,
you know?
Not very often.
So, but there are also more free nights to go see things. There are, you know, more activities happening on weekends for kids to go to. So the whole museum industry has kind of flipped over in the 35 years I've been involved.
I think it's getting smarter. It feels like it's getting smarter. Like it's going, we can't just do the traditional 9 to 5 or whatever we used to do. Like we've got to do things.
Well, it's really about responding to what the people want and need more than we're the museum and this is how it should always be, you know, and I guess everything's kind of that way now.
True. So I'm curious to know, what do you get out of being a teacher? Or what do your students give you?
Energy, really, you know? I just love to see them get it and to see them have, you know, if they're not disruptive, 40 minutes to just chill and be with art supplies, you know? I wish some of the ones that remain disruptive would get the idea that, you know, chillax, man. And it should be so easy to get an A. You know, sorry, art teachers, if you don't agree with me, but, you know, you're just making stuff and you don't have to be like, oh, let me take a test. Let me take a test. And so much of education was already on that computer before this. It's just kind of nice to relax into it, you know?
Yeah.
And I really enjoy seeing that and, you know, knowing that there are other people like me living, sitting there in that elementary, middle school, high school experience, like, you know, I hate all this academic stuff. When can I just make art? And, you know, that's your chance. So,
yeah.
Like I said, it's a lifelong learning adventure that hopefully we're giving them. Unfortunately, there's always going to be 10 or so during the day that are having a rough day. And, you know, so we have to balance that with, you know, does the group get what they need or, you know, how do we do that? And that's kind of the magic of you do the dance.
That's
right. Now they're coming off of that year of not having a whole lot of adult intervention, many of them. And, you know, it's really different to be back in person and to be forced to wear a mask 5 days a week all day long. It's exhausting for us adults.
It is.
You know, and the mask slips off and all day long as adults, put the mask on, put the mask on. Put the that's really probably the hardest part about it. But
I feel you. Don't worry. I'm in retail for my day job and we have not stopped, which means you're literally used to wearing a mask. It's gotten that normal. Like it's weird to think of the first time I put a mask on for work and went, oh, this is awkward. And then you're just so used to it. Now it's like, it's a thing. It's one more thing.
It all depends on the temperature in the room, I guess.
Yeah, true. That is true. Yeah.
You get 45 bodies in a room.
Oh, yeah. No.
The air conditioner is not quite what you need as a 56-year-old woman.
Yeah, no, you know, that's not quite. Yeah, that's different.
That can be a little different, I think. But, you know, I feel for you guys in retail. Anybody considered an essential worker, it's I just don't understand. Yeah. I really don't get it.
No. Me neither.
And, I'm living it. It'd be one thing if we were paying you guys $100,000 a year to put up with it, but we're not.
We're not. No. You know? No. That's a whole nother discussion. Have you got another allowance?
Because I know.
Sorry. Yeah. I missed that.
I said just huge risk for you, you know, especially in the early days.
Yep.
You know, long hours, trying to keep things stocked and dealing with all of us who were just paranoid about catching it from anywhere and anything, and then you're feeling that too.
Yeah. And a lot of anger. There's a lot of anger. And you're like, I didn't make this disease happen. This isn't my fault. I'm just trying to get you what you need.
Well, that's how I feel about dress code in general. You know, I didn't make the rule, but I'm not losing my job over not following the directions. Life is about following the directions or finding some way around them.
Yes.
You know, like if you're going to skip class, don't walk right by me after class. But they do.
Oh, yeah.
So what do I have to do? You know, I mean, come on.
Yeah, true. Well, Rebecca, this has been a great chat. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for making time. I really appreciate you taking time out to chat art, chat education, chat all sort of things. Where is the best place for people to find you online?
Well, you can do two things. You can do at Studio Art Bailey, which is my school site.
Yep.
And I'm really active on that. Almost every day something's going up. And it's a variety of things, but it's school-related stuff.
Yeah.
And then my personal is at Rebecca Weeks Howard. Mm-hmm. So that's where my art side is. But there's also some politics and other things in there too.
Of course. You're a human. You're a normal person. There's so much there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, thank you again, Rebecca. Yep. I've loved this chat. It's been fantastic. Thank you so much. I'll be in touch.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.